Thanks for joining me. I'm Bob Franklin. Today on Like It Is, my conversation with Dr. Margie Baker, a vocalist and former educator in San Francisco, California. Dr. Baker is an avid jazz supporter, and her avid support of jazz is where we start today.
Well, let's talk about jazz. That's a musical format that I know you're very familiar with. Talk about jazz and whether or not, in your view, jazz has changed.
Well, okay. I didn't talk about jazz as growing up because in the country, we didn't know jazz. We only knew blues and also country music. But that African-Americans didn't know too much country music. So I didn't know about jazz at that point. I knew a little about swing, and that's the first music that I heard was gospel, and then blues, and then swing. I knew nothing at all about the beginning of jazz, ragtime, and I knew very little about traditional jazz. We didn't hear any of that. But when I got to California, I was exposed more to swing music, and that's the very first music that I probably heard in California. And some of the band leaders were Erskine Hawkins and Earl Hines, and I was exposed to Billy Eckstein and etc. As a matter of fact, I went into rhythm and blues, and for many, many years, rhythm and blues was the music that I loved until I was about 14 years old. Now, at 14, that's when I first heard this strange music called bebop, and I didn't understand it in the beginning. I still liked the swing, but this was kind of during World War II, and for some reason, swing kind of became less popular because the musicians could not afford big bands. And one of the reasons why I think bebop became kind of popular is because swing music had a lot of dancers. And especially in New York, at the Savoy, a ballroom, quite a great deal of interracial dancing, you know, white and black couples. And I don't think that fit well with society. Therefore, bebop was really pushed, and the small group naturally was because that the musicians could not afford big orchestras anymore. So that's one thing that I remember, that change from the popularity of swing into this new music, bebop, that started catching on all over the world. Well, especially, I shouldn't say all over the world, but it became kind of popular, and I didn't understand it at all. I heard one tune that got me interested in bebop, and that was Manteca.
Thank you.
turned me on to listening to bebop is because of Dizzy Gillespie, who was also the co-creator of bebop. So that's how I got into listening more to other kinds of jazz. Latin jazz, Manteca, really got me into progressive jazz. And from there I started listening to some of the Miles Davis, for example. Well, his changes, he was much less energetic in his playing than the beboppers. And I don't think Miles was that hot on those fast tempos of bebop. And I think he kind of calmed the bebop era down a bit. I really started liking the cool jazz because I could understand it.
Talk a bit about Dizzy Gillespie and how you met Dizzy and what his music and what he has meant for you.
Well, as I said, his music, Manteca, got me into jazz. And I thought the music was weird because I was so young. And I thought this dude with this beret and this goatee, I thought he was weird. I didn't see too much about, Charlie Parker did not promote the music like Dizzy Gillespie did. Therefore, I didn't know as much about Bird as I did about this dude that was always out there being dizzy like a fox. I didn't meet him until I was 17 years old. And the way I met him was, I was in college at 17, and there was a place here in San Francisco called the Black Hawk Jazz Club. And the Black Hawk had a section where I could sit, where teenagers could sit. Well, a group of my college friends went down to the Black Hawk on a Sunday afternoon, and we sat in what they call the, we had to sit behind a screen. We were separated from the regular showroom. We had to sit behind a screen. And Mr. Gillespie, he liked the youth and jazz. Young people. Therefore, during his breaks, he would come and sit with us and shuck and jive with us. And that's how I first met him. But I didn't really get to know him well until about 4 or 5 years later, when I graduated from college and became a school teacher. Then I could go into the nightclubs and sit in the main part of the nightclub and not sit behind a screen. When I married my husband, my mother-in-law said, "Margie, I cannot allow Mary to go around to these nightclubs with anybody. Do you think you could be able to take her around so she could sing?" And I said, "Mom," I called my mother-in-law Mom, I said, "I tell you what, I'm a school teacher and I will not be able to go out on weeknights. However, on the weekends, I'll be glad to take her anywhere she has to go." But I had to chaperone her to these nightclubs because she could not go to them at her age. I had to go with her, and I went with her a great deal. And I took her to the Black Hawk to hear Dizzy Gillespie. And Mr. Gillespie was very impressed with the two of us. And he had a pianist in his band. The pianist was Junior Mance. And Junior Mance met us and asked us would we like to meet his boss. And this was at break time. And we said, yes. So Junior brought Mr. Gillespie over to meet Mary and me. And that's how we met. And that's how we became friends. And we've been friends ever since until the day he died. So that's how I met Mr. Gillespie.
Let me have you share an event that occurred, resulted in you singing the song, "I Left My Heart in San Francisco." Will you tell a bit about that story? Tell us about that story.
Well, I will. First of all, I was about 38 years old and an educator. I never gave up my profession for music. But I had gone to a board meeting that evening, and it was such a terrible board meeting. After the board meeting, I said, I'm going to go all by myself and listen to one of my friends play. And my friend had a band at the San Francisco Hilton. I went to the San Francisco Hilton. I treated myself to dinner. And as I was sitting there all by myself listening to music, my friend pulled the power of the mic on me. He had heard me play around and sing. I wasn't interested in singing. But he announced over the loudspeaker, ladies and gentlemen, we have a wonderful vocalist in the house, and her name is Dr. Margie Baker. I freaked out. Of course, I was not going to be rude, but I was so angry with him because I've never sung publicly. And as I said, this was in the 70s. So I went up to the stage, and he said, Margie, what are you going to sing? I said, I don't know too many songs, George, but I do know the words to I Left My Heart in San Francisco. And the band leader said, well, what key? I said, I don't know keys. You asked me how it happened, Dr. Franklin, and I'm telling you, I didn't know anything. But he said, they tried a key for me, and I sang, I Left My Heart in San Francisco, went back to my dinner, because I was furious. I hadn't even eaten my dinner. I had only eaten the salad, the first course. And lo and behold, here comes two very handsome gentlemen at my table. Dr. Baker? I said, oh, yes, sir. They introduced themselves. We're vice presidents of the Hilton Corporation, and our boss, Conrad Hilton, is sitting over in the corner because we're having a conference in San Francisco this week. And he loves your voice, and he would like to hire you. I said, sirs, I'm not even a singer. I'm an educator, and at the time, I was a school administrator. I said, you know, I'm an educator. I'm not a singer. Oh, but we love your voice, and we would love to. We know you're an educator, and we would love for you to sing for us at your convenience because we are supporters of education. We wouldn't want to take you away from that. So why don't you go and talk to your husband about it? And as soon as you make a decision, why don't you call us? And they gave me their cards. I said, sir, I'm really not a singer, but I'm very honored, and I thank you very much. And I kept those cards. When I got home that night, my husband was asleep. And I said, Kenneth, guess what? The Hilton offered me a gig singing. He said, Margie, I'm asleep. I don't want to hear anything. He thought I was kidding. And that's how it started. I said, well, what do you think? He said, my husband said, well, if you're stupid enough to burn candles at both ends, go on and do what you think you have to do. I said, I'm not giving up my job to sing. He said, well, whatever. I said, I'm going to try it. And therefore, I called the vice president, Mr. Warner Lewin, and I said, I'll try it. I want you to know I'm not an entertainer. I don't know too much about music, but I will try it. But I won't give up my daytime job. They said, oh, no, we'll make it very convenient. So here's what we'd like for you to think about. We would like for you to work two nights a week during the school year. I was on that gig for 23 years. That's how it started. That's what started my show business career.
I want to talk about your education as an educator. Teaching kids was a high priority, still a high priority. Talk about, you know, your commitment to education and to kids.
All of my my life, I wanted to be a teacher. Born in the woods of Texas, in small communities in Texas, school teaching was a top profession, and I wanted to be a school teacher, and that's what I became. I got a 2-year scholarship to the University of California. I used that 2 years. I could have gotten a 4-year, but it was the University of California was just too far away from San Francisco. I had to get up at 6 a.m. to get to Berkeley. So I asked my mom, could I transfer to San Francisco State, where I got all my, where I graduated, got my BA, and got my administrative credential. And then after I did that, I worked for some years. And then I decided I wanted to work on a PhD. And I enrolled in this very wealthy Catholic institution, the University of San Francisco, which was very expensive. I got my doctorate from the University of San Francisco. And I was so dedicated. I loved teaching, but I also wanted to train teachers to teach, because I had been a master teacher. When I was a teacher, the school district always sent me student teachers. And once I became, once I got my administrative credential, I was hired to work on the superintendent's staff. And in that job, I did a lot of, I put together a lot of workshops and did quite a bit of teacher training, because I was committed. And I was also in charge of a federal and state program called ESEA Title I that helped at-risk children from low-income homes. And we were funded to teach them reading, mathematics, and we also got funds for parent involvement, for multicultural education. And as an administrator, I was a supervisor of making sure that these federal funds were placed where they were supposed to be placed, in low-income schools, or in schools where low-income children attended. So that was my commitment. I always wanted to help. I always wanted to educate. And I especially wanted to educate my little children of color.
In 1976, you got Dizzy Gillespie and his band to perform an engagement at the San Francisco Unified School District for a year. How did you get that? How did you make that happen?
Oh, not for a year. But Mr. Gillespie was a friend of mine then, and this was the bicentennial year, 1976. So I called Mr. Gillespie. I said, you know, Mr. Gillespie, this is our bicentennial year, and I want to do something with my children to help them understand what we African Americans have contributed to our society. And Mr. Gillespie thought that was an excellent idea. I said, I would like for the Board of Education to hire you for a week, you and your band, to come out and give workshops and concerts for my children. And their parents would be involved. As a matter of fact, the public could come. They could be involved in the concerts, not in the workshop, but in the concert, they could come and hear the concert. He thought that was an excellent idea. And surely enough, he and his band came out and spent 1 week with us giving concerts and workshops for teachers, and then working with the children. And it was just really a wonderful week. They didn't want to leave. They wanted to be hired another week. I said, yeah, if you think the school district is going to pay you again for as much as you charge, you're wrong. but they didn't want to leave. They loved.
And let me ask you, what is it about children, kids, when that light bulb, as I like to say, goes out off, and you see that they're learning, they're ingesting, and they're becoming educated with the information you're giving them. How does that make you feel?
Well, it makes me feel like $1 million, because in my classroom, when I was a teacher, I did everything possible to make learning fun. Everything possible to make learning fun. And the children and I would do all kinds of wonderful things, go on field trips and all kinds of stuff. So it made me feel wonderful, because in the San Francisco public schools, I was chosen as one of the top elementary school teachers, that's kindergarten through eighth, in the San Francisco public schools. And I was given an award for being one of the top teachers.
Let me ask you finally about coming full circle, jazz, great jazz venue, which is San Francisco, great jazz community. What would you like people to know who've never visited San Francisco to know about the importance, the cultural importance of jazz in San Francisco?
I would like for people to know that jazz has united people of all races, creeds, and colors in San Francisco. The jazz community is a united community, and also the blues community. The jazz blues community is a multi-ethnic community of musicians and bands. And the musicians have a great deal of respect for one another, regardless of race. I want people to know that. Jazz is a unifier. It brings people together. And the reason that I'm stressing this so much now to you is because our world needs to be, our country needs to be unified once more. And I've always thought of jazz as being one of the art forms that unites people of all multi-ethnic groups.
Well, you would agree with me that music is a universal language.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it has brought people together all over the world. Jazz has done that. I think jazz, as far as I'm concerned, is the most popular genre that brings people together. But, you know, all genres of music are universal. I love classical music. I love Latin. I'm not just Latin jazz. I love Latin folk music. I love music of all kinds, but naturally, my love for jazz kind of exceeds all the other music that I love.
Dr. Baker, it's been an honor talking with you and having you share some time with me today. Thank you very much.
I appreciate it, and it was an honor talking to you. Thank you for inviting me.
You take real good care.
Thank you.
My guest has been Dr. Margie Baker, an educator, vocalist, and jazz ambassador. Quoting Dr. Baker about her beloved San Francisco, quote, "Our great city has a world-class jazz venue that's dedicated to Afro-influenced world music and presents gifted artists of all races, creeds, and colors from around the globe," end quote. A great quote from a great lady. Carmen McRae ends today's program fittingly with the tune, "I Left My Heart in San Francisco." I'm Bob Franklin. I'll be back next week with 30 more minutes of good conversation on another edition of Like It Is.
The loveliness of Paris seems somehow sadly gay. The glory that was Rome is of another day. I've been terribly alone and forgotten in Manhattan. I'm going home to my city by the bay. I left my heart in San Francisco. High on a hill, it calls to me to be where little cable cars climb halfway to the stars. Your morning fog may chill the air, but I don't care. My love waits there in San Francisco. Above the blue
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.